Chapter 7. Brothers in Arms. Nemiel's squad raced down the narrow street towards the location of Echo 4's downed pod, expecting to encounter more rebel troops at any moment. Sounds of fighting between Astartes squads and enemy forces echoed across the grey zone with increasing intensity as the rebels began to respond to the danger in their midst. Nemiel heard the bark of autocannons, and here and there the flat boom of a tank's battle cannon adding to the din. "Turn south at the next corner," he called out to his squad. "Echo 4 should be another 400 metres down the cross street and somewhere to the left."
"Acknowledged," said Brother Jung, one of the two warriors on point.
Nemiel watched the Astartes race up to the street corner and put their backs to a burnt-out storefront, their bolters held across their chests. One of the two warriors, Brother Cortus, Nemiel thought, slid to the end of the wall and peered around the corner. Nemiel heard the battle cannon fire and watched the corner of the building Cortus was standing at disintegrate in the space of a single heartbeat. The two Astartes disappeared in a blizzard of pulverized stone and fragments of structural steel. A billowing cloud of dust and smoke enveloped the intersection and rolled down the street towards the rest of the squad. The squad took cover on reflex, crouching behind rubble piles or pressing close to a building wall. Nemiel checked his helmet display and saw the status icon for Brother Cortus flash from green to amber. He was wounded, perhaps seriously, but still functional. The walls of the building must have shielded the Astartes from the worst of the blast. Less than a minute later, Brother Jung emerged from the smoke cloud, his black armour caked with brown dust. He was half-carrying, half-dragging Brother Cortus. Nemiel rose from cover and jogged forward as Jung set the wounded warrior down next to the shattered stoop of a HAB unit. Cortus reached up and fumbled with his helmet. One side of the ceramite helm had been partially crushed, shattering the right ocular and splitting it from crown to nape. Jung lent a hand and helped the wounded Astartes pull the helmet free.
"Status?" Nemiel asked.
Brother Cortus sent the smashed helmet bouncing across the street. The skin on the right side of his face had been deeply scored by the impact, peeling away the flesh down to the bone in some places. His right eye was a bloody ruin, but the wound was clotting quickly thanks to Cortus's enhanced healing ability.
"One battle tank and four APCs 300 metres south," he said, his voice rough with pain. "Approximately a platoon of infantry in hasty defensive positions. Maybe more." "I was talking about your head, brother."
Cortus glanced dazedly at the Redemptor, blinking his one good eye.
"Oh, that," he said dismissively. "It's nothing. Did anyone see what happened to my bolter?"
"Here," Jung said laconically, handing over Cortus's dirt-caked weapon. The wounded warrior's face brightened.
"Thanks for that, brother," he replied. "Cole would have had my skin if I'd lost it."
"Too right," Sergeant Cole growled as he crouched down beside Nemiel. "It sounds like the rebels have beaten us to Echo 4," he said to the Redemptor. "We might already be too late."
"Or perhaps we're just in time," Nemiel countered. 300 meters is too far away to have a good chance at a kill with a melter gun. We'll have to get closer."
He looked back down the way they'd come, searching for an alley they could use to outflank the enemy position, but there was none.
"We'll have to cut through the buildings," he decided. "Sergeant, you and Ascalon lead the way."
Cole nodded and beckoned to the Tech Marine. Nemiel helped Cortus to his feet, then followed the sergeant through the HAB unit's gaping doorway. It took 10 minutes for the squad to work its way through the partially collapsed structure. Cole and Ascalon ploughed through any rubble in their path. In places, the Tech Marine used his servo arm to reinforce damaged structural supports so that the squad could keep moving without touching off a cave-in. They emerged from the building via a broken-out viewport, crossed a narrow, filth-strewn alley, and entered the shell of another structure on the far side. The second building had almost completely caved in, forcing the Astartes to scramble over enormous piles of rubble to reach the opposite side. Nemiel could hear the idling rumble of petrochem engines now and the distant sound of shouted orders. They reached the crest of a rubble pile close to the far corner of the building and hunkered down. Nemiel joined Cole and Ascalon and peered over the top of the pile. By this point, his armour was so caked in dust that it was nearly invisible against the backdrop of debris. He could see the enemy positions through the tall, broken viewport frames at the corner of the ruined structure. The battle tank was parked in the centre of another intersection, its flanks wreathed in exhaust fumes. The four APCs were arrayed behind it in a loose formation. Their ramps were down and their troops had deployed into cover on either side of the street. At the opposite corner of the intersection stood a ruined HAB unit with a huge ragged hole high on the side of one of its upper stories. Flames licked hungrily about the hole.
"We found Echo 4," Nemiel announced over the vox. "Varda, set up your shot. Everyone else, get ready to move."
Brother Marthis worked his way up the rubble pile and aimed his melter gun through the viewport frame at the tank. The rest of the squad climbed up the slope to either side, their weapons ready. The melter gunner glanced at Nemiel and gave a nod.
"Fire!"
Nemiel said. The melter gun went off with a hissing shriek of superheated air and struck the tank in the side, right beside the engine. Molten pieces of armor plate and track segments went spinning through the air. Nemiel surged to his feet.
"Loyalty and honor!"
the Redemptor cried.
"Charge!"
With a shout, the Dark Angels scrambled down the rubble pile and leapt through the open viewport frames, their bolt guns blazing. Rebel troops tumbled to the ground, their light armor no match for the bolters' powerful rounds, but the survivors immediately returned fire. Lasgun rounds buzzed through the air, detonating against the sides of the blackened buildings with a staccato crackle. Nemiel emerged into the street at a run, charging straight towards the parked APCs. The Testudos were already traversing their gun turrets, but the Astartes were too close for the vehicles to use their guns effectively. Lasgun bolts seared the air around him. He brought up his bolt pistol and snapped off two quick shots, hitting a trooper crouching in the doorway of a building a little further down the street.
"Get across the intersection," he ordered over the vox. "Make for the building on the opposite side. That's where Echo 4 went down,"
Nemiel said, running past the burning tank. Ascalon and Cole dogged his heels, trading fire with the rebel troops. They ran into the midst of the parked APCs, and the sergeant tossed a fragmentation grenade into the troop compartments of the two vehicles he could reach. Marthis took aim and fired on the move, hitting one of the Testudos a bit farther down the street. The bolt struck the APC square on the front glasses and burned easily through the armor plate, touching off a huge explosion. Nemiel reached the far side of the intersection in just a few seconds and found himself under fire from three different directions. Another squad had taken cover around the building where Echo 4 had gone down, and now they fired point-blank at the onrushing Astartes. A lasbolt struck Nemiel full in the chest. Another dug a glowing crater out of his left pauldron, but his ceramite armor withstood the worst of the impacts. Ascalon was struck several times as well, but his ornate harness, forged by the master craftsman on Mars itself, shrugged off the hits with ease. To Nemiel's right, Brother Sergeant Cole shot one rebel soldier point-blank with his bolt pistol, then sliced his power sword through another. Nemiel caught sight of an enemy sergeant off to the left, hastily switching power cells on his las pistol. The Redemptor shot the man twice, then rushed in among the rest of the soldiers, slaying every rebel he could reach with savage blows from his Crozius. A lasbolt flashed through the building's open doorway and struck him in the midsection. He felt a searing pain as the bolt found a weak spot in his armor, but the ceramite plating still managed to deflect most of its energy. Roaring a challenge, Nemiel pressed forward into the building, leaving the survivors of the enemy squad to his brethren. He found himself inside another blasted, fire-scorched shell. The HAB unit's roof and three stories had collapsed some time ago, leaving only the battered outer walls still standing. In the corner of the building, directly opposite the entrance, sat Echo 4. The drop pod had come down at nearly a 45-degree angle and had dug itself into a mound of crushed flakboard and masonry. There wasn't a single ramp that could properly deploy at that angle, leaving the occupant trapped inside. Figures scattered about the shadowy interior, firing las guns and las pistols at Nemiel. One bolt struck his right thigh, while two more punched into his chest. Amber warning telltales flashed on his armor readout, but the suit's integrity was still well within accepted parameters. He charged towards the pod, his powerful legs driving him relentlessly over the shifting piles of rubble. His bolt pistol barked again and again. Each shot struck home, killing a rebel soldier as he rose from cover or tried to switch positions to outflank him. He had just crested the tallest debris pile, only 10 short meters from the drop pod, when he saw the flicker of an energy field, low and to his left. Without thinking, he dodged to the right and brought his Crozius down to block the blow, and just barely managed to keep his leg from being cut off at the knee. As it was, the rebel lieutenant's power sword sliced deeply through his left calf and caused him to stumble. The pain was so intense it took his breath away. Even with the auto-hypnotic rotes at his command, the wound very nearly sent him into shock. His armor sensed the damage and immediately compensated, stiffening the pseudo-musculature of his left calf and immobilizing it like a ceramite splint. The sudden change in mobility pitched Nemuel forward, sending him sliding face-first down the debris pile into the midst of the platoon's small command squad. The rebels closed in on Nemuel from all sides, firing their las pistols as they came. He was hit in the head, shoulders and chest. The armor stopped the blasts, but the integrity sensors began to shade from amber to red. He heard the distinctive crackle of the rebel lieutenant's power sword as the man chased down the slope after him. Nemuel crashed to a stop against a tangle of steel supports at the base of the pile and twisted onto his side just as the enemy officer reached him. The power sword swept down at his chest, and he just managed to twist far enough to parry it with his Crozius. Snarling, the lieutenant drew back his blade for a quick thrust, but Nemuel brought around his bolt pistol and shot the man through the heart. Another rebel soldier rushed past the lieutenant's falling body and tried to drive a bayonet into Nemuel's throat. The Redemptor contemptuously blocked the thrust with his Crozius and killed the soldier with a backhanded blow to his head. The remaining soldiers scattered as Brother Sergeant Cole reached the crest of the debris pile and opened fire with his bolt pistol. The survivors retreated from sight around another mound of fallen permacrete. Cole sheathed his power weapon and dashed nimbly down the slope.
"Are you all right, brother?"
he called, extending his hand. Nemuel waved the offer of assistance away.
"I'm fine,"
he said, climbing quickly to his feet. He was about to ask for Brother Ascalon when the tech marine appeared at the top of the pile and quickly moved to join them. Instead of inquiring about Nemuel, however, his eyes were for the drop pod alone. Ascalon indicated an open crate a few meters away. Four disc-shaped melter charges had been carefully unpacked and sat in a neat row on a small slab of flakboard.
"I'd say we were just in time,"
he noted, giving Cole a meaningful look.
"Well, you know what I say, Ascalon,"
Cole shot back, but the rest of his retort was swallowed in a thunderous explosion as the tank outside fired its battle cannon into the derelict building. The blast pulverized a 10-meter-wide section of the building's front entrance, showering the Astartes in a hail of jagged stone and metal. When the cloud of dust and smoke cleared, Nemuel could look through the hole the cannon had made and see the enemy tank still sitting where Marthys had hit it. The melter blast had knocked out the vehicle's engine, but the crew was still very much alive.
"Marthys!"
Nemuel called out over the vox.
"I know, brother, I know,"
Marthys called back.
"I'm at the southern end of the building with half the squad. Just give me a minute to get into position." "We may not have another minute,"
Nemuel shot back, but it wasn't himself or his squad mates he was worried about. The down drop pod made for a much more enticing target.
"Ascalon, we've got to get that pod open,"
he shouted. The tech marine nodded his helmeted head.
"We need to get it level fast so the ramps can deploy,"
he said. His gaze fell to the melter charges.
"Help me with these,"
he said, and bent to grab two of the discs. Nemuel and Cole each grabbed one of the charges and followed Ascalon around to the far side of the pod. The tech marine surveyed the debris pile, then activated his servo arm and began to dig deep gouges into the rubble at specific points below the canted end of the pod.
"You're not going to be able to dig this pile out fast enough," Cole barked.
"I'm not planning to, brother,"
Ascalon said. He took one of the melter charges, set its timer, and shoved it into one of the gouges, then quickly placed the second one. Nemuel heard the whine of servos as the tank's turret rotated to bear on its new target. Then came a shriek of superheated air, and a melter blast struck the tank from its right. The detonation reverberated down the street, but when the smoke cleared, Nemuel saw that Marthys had shot from too far away and the melter blast hadn't fully penetrated the tank's armor. The crew inside had likely been stunned by the hit, but that wouldn't last for more than a few seconds. Ascalon grabbed the charge from Nemuel's fingers.
"I'd find some cover if I were you,"
he said, setting its timer and placing it in the pile. The three Astartes hurried away from the pod and crouched at the base of the debris pile. No sooner had they settled onto one knee than the four charges detonated in carefully orchestrated succession. The blast went off so close together that the sound merged into a single, thunderous explosion. Molten stone and vaporized earth sheeted out from the pile, channeled away from the pod by the precise placement of the charges. In one stroke, Ascalon removed 10 cubic meters of rubble from beneath one end of the drop pod. Slowly, then with gathering speed, the elevated end of the pod began to settle until it landed upright with a hollow metal clang. The flank of the pod slammed into the corner of the building, sending an alarming series of cracks forking across the damaged walls. Immediately, Nemiel heard the metal thud of harness releases popping, then the buzzing whine of servos as the pod's four large ramps finally deployed, revealing Echo 4's lone passenger. The huge figure in the centre of the pod was approximately humanoid in shape, with two stubby, powerful legs and a pair of mighty weapon arms attached to a giant, barrel-like torso. A sensor turret, shaped similarly to a helmet-clad head, swiveled left and right from an armoured collar set a little above the torso's middle. The overall effect was of a hulking, hunchbacked giant with a matte-black ceramite hide. Both shoulders bore the winged sword emblem of the First Legion, and a score of noble battle honours fluttered from the dreadnought's frontal plates. A Mechanicum artisan had applied gilt scrollwork to the glacis just beneath the dreadnought's notional head, which bore the name Titus. Gears and servo motors whirring, Brother Titus strode from his drop pod just as the tank fired its cannon once more. The shell flew into the pod where Titus had been standing a moment before and blew it apart. Red-hot shrapnel pinged like raindrops off Brother Titus's shoulders. The dreadnought cleared the ramp in three long steps and kicked its way through the debris piles towards the rebel tank. Its turret slewed to the right, desperately tracking the oncoming war machine, while the crew struggled to load another round into the cannon's breech. Brother Titus was armed with a standard dreadnought weapons configuration. His right arm terminated in a large multi-barrel assault cannon capable of firing streams of high-velocity shells that were lethal to troops and light vehicles, but far less likely to penetrate the thick armor of a battle tank. Titus's left arm, however, ended in a powerful four-fingered hand that crackled with pent-up energies like an Astartes power fist. Nemiel and his brothers watched Titus charge through the ragged gap blown in the front of the building and bring that tremendous fist down on the top of the tank's square turret. Armor plates crumpled like tin. There was a bright violet spark and a tremendous concussion as the turret split apart beneath the blow. Flames leapt from the ruptured seams. Nemiel shook his head in awe at the dreadnought's power.
"Brother Sergeant Cole, reform the squad," he said, and began limping quickly from the building.
The pain in his leg had subsided to a dull ache, thanks to injections from his suit's array of pain blockers and his own enhanced healing abilities. He switched to the company's command net.
"Force Commander Lamnos, this is Alpha 6," he said. "We've reached Echo 4 and freed Brother Titus. No enemy forces in our immediate area. What are your orders?"
"Good work, Alpha 6," Lamnos responded. "Titus was the only one still unaccounted for. The rest of the landing force has engaged rebel units along the tramway, and we've received word that forward elements of the Tanagran Dragoons are working south to link up with us."
There was a short pause while Lamnos consulted with his other squad leaders.
"There are still enemy units present around the entrance to the forge complex, approximately 1 kilometer to your southeast. Take Titus and engage the rebels."
"Affirmative,"
Nemiel replied. "Alpha 6, out."
The Redemptor limped over to Cole and Ascalon, who were standing in the shadow of Brother Titus. Ascalon was clearly in awe of the mighty dreadnought. Cole was looking up at Titus's sensor turret, his head cocked as though in conversation. They were probably speaking on a private channel, he realized. Dreadnoughts were an uncommon sight in the legions. Since they required a human mind to operate, only severely injured Astartes were offered the opportunity to continue serving the Emperor by having themselves installed into one of the war machines. Those offered the task were typically warriors who had demonstrated great heroism in battle and were mentally strong enough to endure their entombment in a dreadnought sarcophagus. As a result, they were accorded tremendous respect by their brethren. Titus's head swiveled slightly at Nemiel's approach.
"My thanks to you and your squad, Brother Redemptor," he said over the squad channel.
Titus's voice was deep and powerful and entirely synthetic, devoid of human inflection.
"Force Commander Lamnos has directed me to accompany your squad for the time being. What is our objective?"
"The rebels have taken the southern entrance to the forge complex," Nemiel said, turning and heading off to the southeast. "We're going to take it back."